So this is Nick Birch. This will be...
give a talk about Apache Tika. What's new with version 2.0, right? Okay, please. Welcome the speaker.
Yes.
Perfect. Let's just check. Blinking lights? All good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Afternoon, everyone. Last day. Still a lot more to learn. Okay. Who here has used Apache Tika before? Got a few hands. Who's kind of heard of it before they saw the schedule? Okay. Those of you who are using it, are you on to kind of bleeding edge 1.14, 1.15, or something older? Bleeding edge? Something older? Okay. That's good. Okay. So I can concentrate on what's new rather than what it is. Okay. So for those of you who didn't put your hand up at the start, the idea for Tika is that it's a Babelfish for content. It'll help you work out what the hell your thing is, get the metadata out of it, and then give you back either plain text, which is ideal for indexing, or simplified XHTML that's better for filtering and simple previews and that sort of thing. In the news, who's heard of the Panama Papers? Just checking that you're all still awake. okay, so they used Apache Tika to extract out the text from the bulk of the files, because the bulk of the files in the dump weren't handy plain text documents. They're Word documents, PowerPoints, images, and so on. So they used Apache Tika to get the data out, to get the text out of the data. They then mostly put it into Apache Solr for searching, and then they used Neo4j, which is open source, but LGPL, I think, that is a graph database that they use to spot the links between all the data and all the documents. But it's quite interesting, and if you want to know a bit more about the tech behind Panama Papers, that's a really good article on it. Sadly, they won't give us a copy of all the data for a regression corpus, but we are trying to get them to at least tell us the most common stack traces they got out so that we can try and help for next time. The other thing that's going on is DARPA have given some funding towards expanding Tika. They're interested in being able to index more of the dark web, so they've been funding some work to help get some of the less common file formats covered and also do some things using Tika to make it easier to actually index and search. Though I'm not sure that the person at DARPA who wrote the grant had written the grant right, because most of the work seems to be now on indexing more scientific file formats found at NASA, because JPL won the contract. And while that is technically dramatically increasing the number of file formats that Tika can index, I'm not sure that was quite the ones that DARPA meant to fund. Though, you know, they have actually increased what they can support, just it's all NASA data now. Okay. So, anyone here try building a web spider in about 2000, 2002? None of you were that careless? Yes. Someone else like me. So, what you used to do was you used to go to the Lucene Wiki and grab these snippets of Java code that may or may not compile. And then you'd go and search through the list archives and find some more instructions about what jar you had to put in with it. And you'd kind of end up with this creaking, bespoke set of stuff that would let you get some text out of the Word document that your boss had just uploaded into the CMS, or that you just spidered off some new site that you could then try and push into Lucene so that you could search it. It was full of bugs. Everyone made all the same mistakes. Everyone was using old versions, different bits of text missing. No one knew what was going on. Or alternatively, you could go and spend, I've got a feeling it was about $150,000 in 2002 for some commercial pieces of software that were just as bad but had a support contract. And it was a mess. Apache Nutch, anyone heard of Nutch? A few people. So the Apache Nutch project was founded by a bunch of people that figured that spidering the web couldn't be that hard, could it? And then they accidentally went and invented Hadoop because it turned out to be quite hard. They had a lot of these same snippets of Java code that they were trying to use to get the binary data out and so on. And then they were talking to Apache Lucene because Nitro was using Lucene to do the indexing. And they kicked around a few ideas, compared the different bits of creaking code, and then dumped it all into the incubator. So that was 2007. Graduated in 2008, hit V1 in 2011. Still hasn't hit V2. Been a lot of work, but not V2. This is the best I can manage for a graph of the Tiki releases. If anyone knows how to make OpenOffice draw a graph where one of the axes goes past 1.9 and then goes to 1.10 and 1.11 without it looking like a Z, I'd really love to know. The main thing, though, is that we keep doing releases and we're making progress. So, what can you get from Tika? What file formats can you support? The easiest ones, HTML, XHTML, XML, that's kind of what Tika works with natively inside. Microsoft Office. All of the Microsoft Office file formats you can think of and a few other ones we support. Word, Excel, PowerPoint, but then also Works and Publisher and Visio. The Open Document Format, ODF. iWorks, I think we're now again supporting all the versions of that. Apple do keep releasing new versions that have the same file extension, and that's about it that they have in common. I think we've got the new one working, thanks to help from Commons. PDF, RTF, plain text, all those kind of other ones. We support most of the compression and archive formats you can think of. Again, thank you to all the Commons Compress folks. All the scientific file formats. Then we've got a surprising number of the audio and video formats as well now. So we've got MP3, MP4, and then all the Vorbis suite. Most of the image formats you might want. So, first thing that you're going to want to do with Tika generally is figure out what the hell is this thing that you have from the internet, from your local file system, on that USB stick, whatever else. And that's actually a surprisingly hard problem to do reliably, and especially at scale. If it's on your machine and you're quite well behaved, you can probably figure it out from the file extension. If it's on someone else's machine, especially disorganized people or people who don't really understand computers, the file extension probably isn't going to tell you, and not always uniquely. If you're dealing with stuff coming in from the internet, who here has received an email that's like invoice.doc.scr, purchaseorder.doc.exe? What it looks like, what it is, can be quite different. So you do have the file name. At best, treat it as a hint, is what we say. You've got the first few hundred bytes of a lot of files. You can look for common patterns at the start. Most people who are writing their third or fourth file format put some unique byte patterns at the start that help you work out what it is. Most people doing their first file format don't think of this until too late, and you end up saying, okay, well, if I see PE null 1, 2, at offsets 120 or 240, and I see a lot of other nulls around it, maybe it's a Windows executable. And then if you see a file that starts with 0xFFFE, it might be a UTF-16 little endian file byte order mark, or it might be the sync tag of an MP3 frame, or possibly something else, then not always quite as unique as you might want. So in Tika, we have to have a kind of preference list, and it's like, if you find this but not this, it's probably that. If you find this one on its own, then it might be that, unless you found something that claimed to be a better match, to kind of work through these different combinations. Then there's the fun of containers. For example, zip files. You look for a file, it starts pk34. That's a zip file. or it might be an OOXML docx, which is a bunch of XML files in a zip file, or it might be an ODS file, which is a bunch of XML files in a zip file, or it might be an old version of the iWorks formats before they went to use Snappy for their compression, or it might be an EPUB, or it might be something else that I've never heard of. So you then end up having to get the whole file, look inside it, look inside that container, and start saying, ah, well, it's got a square brackets content type.xml, probably going to be a Microsoft Office file format. Oh, look, it's got MIME types.xml, probably going to be one using the Open Packaging Convention. We can look at that and see what it is. The downside of that is that you've got to have the whole file available to you to then actually open it up, start processing it, look inside, spot those file names, and now you know what it is. But you've ended up doing a third of the work of processing the actual contents of the file just to work out what the thing is to then go and find the right parser to do the work on it. So you can have some trade-offs available to you. Do you want it to be fast and moderately reliable, or potentially slow and probably a bit more reliable? You can't have both, unfortunately. Metadata, what the thing is. Main thing to note about Tika is it tries to map file format specific things onto something common. So you don't have to know whether it was author or creator or created by or first author or the zeroth index into the creator array. It will just say, look, this is the thing that roughly is equivalent to what Dublin Core defined as a creator. And we try and use other people's definitions of metadata, not least because generally they can write better than us and they have translators, so you can work out what this thing is. So we say DC creator Svante, and you're going, well, what's okay, it's from this guy called Svante, but what's DC creator mean? You can then go off and find the Dublin Core specification, read what they define it to be, and then be like, ah, okay, yeah, so I understand what that thing is, oh, and then the answer's Svante. Rather than you having to go and read our Java docs or read our stuff, we try and use other people's definitions of the metadata to give the values. Plain text, generally aimed at people doing indexing. We strip out all the markup, we strip out a lot of the other information, just give you something nice and clean, in a predictable. It's all Java strings, so we've done all the encoding stuff for you so that bit's easy. Tika calls out to all the other libraries, does all the hard work, just gives you back some nice, clean, plain text that you can index. Feed it into Solr, feed it into Lucene, Elasticsearch, whatnot. XHTML, series of SAX events for the content. It's not aiming to be Microsoft Word, Open Document, Save as HTML, which is probably a good thing because that's kind of halfway through invoking Cthulhu, I think, that kind of markup. The aim is that you can say, this is a title, this is a link, this is a second section of the document. So semantically meaningful, not rich preview, not complete reproduction of the file, just to kind of, this is roughly what it is. If you want to split on a page and it's a page-based format, you can. Okay, so what have we changed in the last few years? First and most important one I think people will notice is the number of formats that we now support. So if you go back to sort of Tika 0.7, where are we? And you listed all of the formats, you'd have had, I don't know, the top three, maybe two or three of that next line, one or two of the other entries, and that would have been it. Initially, it was just supporting a handful of the most common file formats. Since then, we've been adding new formats at about the rate of three or four per release. As people have come along with new ideas, as bits of the US government have thrown money at the JPL folks in California, as the nice folks at Google have thrown money at GSOC students, all that kind of thing keeps expanding the number of formats we handle. So amongst Microsoft Office, most recent couple of releases, we've expanded from supporting Excel 97 to everything back to Excel 2. We probably could do Excel 1 if someone could give us a sample file so we can test. Not completely sure, but we think we've probably got most of them covered. You know, we've got Visio, got Outlook. Visio, we added some more support a couple of weeks ago. There was a to-do in the code that said to-do find sample document, and it had been there for 6 years. And then someone came along and was like, hey, can I just remove this exception? And we said, well, we're kind of hoping that we could have the support. And he was like, well, why haven't you added the support in 6 years? Clearly no one's going to do it. And we said, well, the fact that you've triggered that exception tends to imply that you've got one of those documents. And he was like, yeah, here it is. And then an hour later, we had support for it. I'm thinking maybe we need to make some of these exceptions a bit clearer. It's like, to do, go to Jira and upload this file. maybe then we can catch a few more of these error case formats and get the support in. Every time Commons Compress does a new release, they seem to add a new compression file format. So we upgrade the POM, and then we magically get another one. That's really quite nice of them. Then we've got all the audio and video formats. We added some more support for the esoteric bits of the JPEG format in the last few weeks. So we're now handling them from PDF and for OCR. So it's just kind of quite a lot more. One of the things that we've also done recently is for the video formats, if we're giving you text, we can tell you, like, this is 640 by 480, it's in the YUV color space. But that's kind of about it that you could normally give. But there's been some work going on around video histograms, where it's not quite like MPlayer with AALib, where you see all the characters moving around. But it's trying to give you some simple histograms describing the content of the video frames that you can index as a text document and then do similarity matches. And you can say, here is a video still of Svante against a handy green background. Can you see any other videos that look like they might contain Svante? And as long as they've got some quite good, clean video data, you can then sometimes do some similarity matching. It's probably not going to tell you exactly which files it's in, but it can narrow down your search space so that then when you do more detailed video image detection and that sort of thing, you're working on a handful of the videos rather than all of the videos that you ever spidered off the internet. We support now quite a few of the email formats. That seems to be quite popular with the people doing the digital forensics and legal stuff. They seem quite keen on emails. And then all of the scientific file formats, executables. We can tell you whether something is an executable, what platform it will run on, whether it has shared library support, that sort of thing. I think most people seem to just say, is it executable? If so, delete it. Who are doing that? But if you're actually interested in working out what this thing is, it can be quite handy. Then we started adding support for some of the database formats, generally only the ones that are single file, because then the model we have is that you give us a file and we give you stuff back. If it's a PostgreSQL database with 50 files per table, then that model doesn't quite work because we can't give you the contents from 1/50th of the data. But for SQLite and Microsoft Access, where there's a single giant file with all the data in, we can now, with the right libraries, make that work. Only other thing to point out is that in order to support all of these file formats, we've had to add in an awful lot more libraries. So if you're jumping from Tika 1.2 to 1.15, probably best if you're using Maven or Gradle. Trying to get all of those libraries yourself by hand is getting pretty tricky these days because there's so many of them that we pull in. I'll add that a bit in a minute. OCR, optical character recognition. We've got hooks out to Tesseract, which seems to be the best of the open source OCR libraries. So you can turn that on, and then if you've got PDFs, which are scans, if you've got JPEGs, that kind of thing, we can try and give you some text back from it by handing it off to Tesseract and then giving you the text back. You do have to either have Tesseract on your path or tell us where Tesseract can be found. It's not completely magic. The only thing that isn't quite working well is combining Tesseract with something else. if you want to say, okay, pass this as a PDF, use all the nice normal PDF stuff, but on page three that's a scanned image, then I want to call out to Tesseract on just that. We're making some progress on it, and I'll come on to that a little bit later, but just to be aware of. Container formats, the zips that can have everything else in. We've got better support now, but you do need to have the whole file available. Databases, starting to get support. For SQLite, you have to drop an extra jar onto your class path if you want to support it. Partly that's because it's huge, and partly because it involves native code and JNI, and most people don't want that on by default. But if you're interested, if you just get the extra jar, that'll work. Tika config XML. Anyone tried editing their own Tika config file? No? Okay. With the config XML, you can specify what parsers you want to use, what detectors you want to use, what translators, what service loading. You can set up explicitly and say, I only want to support these two formats. You can have an empty one that's just Tika config, closed tag that gets all the defaults. Most commonly, people seem to use it with default except. Everything that Tika would normally do, but no executables. Everything that Tika would normally do, but for this one MIME type, I want to use a different parser to default. If you use the Tika app, it can dump out the currently running config, and it can give you the minimum one that will work. So if you're using everything with the defaults, that's the empty one. Or you can say make it explicit, and it will go through, find all the parsers available, list those out explicitly. So if you want to disable two, that's the easiest way to go about doing that. The other thing that's handy is that you can give the Tika app a config file and tell it to print out what it thinks was in that config so that you can check that you've not made any mistakes, check that it really is finding all the parsers you thought it was going to find to then customize. Here's an example. The slides will be up later, so you probably need to look. But the important thing here is you can say, I want to use the default parser, but don't use it for these two MIME types, and never use that parser. And then the rest of it will run. Embedded resources have been a bit tricky to do in a way that doesn't surprise people. If you've got a zip file, then everything in it is effectively an embedded resource. So you've got a zip with three images in. Each of those images is an embedded resource. You're kind of expecting that. If you've got a PowerPoint file that contains an embedded Excel file, that contains an embedded Word document, that contains an audio file, then you probably need to shoot whoever designs your presentations. But the point is, when you give that to Tika and say, hey, can I get the text? And the question for Tika is, well, what were you expecting? How do we make it easy for you to get what you were expecting? If you're doing digital forensics, you probably want to see all of the things down that chain to spot what's going on, check the metadata of them, parse them separately. If you're writing a content management system, you just want all the text of all the inner bits so that someone can search for sales target 2016. And even though that's in the Excel file, in the Word file, in the PowerPoint file, it'll still help them locate that thing that they're looking for. The way that we do that is you can pass an extra object into Tika on the pass context, which is going to implement an interface that tells Tika what to do with it. The most common ones would be you just specify another parser and you just get all the text back. So if you're doing the CMS case, just drop an auto detect parser on, you get all the stuff back. Or we have the recursing parser, where you give us one of those, we'll pass the text and we'll ping you every time we get another embedded document and let you get back the metadata from them. If anyone's come across a better model for that in any other software, we'd be keen to hear, because it does seem to confuse people, but we can't work out how to do it better. Tika app's been around for a long time, but we've had a lot more options to it lately. Really good for trying things out. I wouldn't recommend using it in production, because you're going to be spawning a new JVM each time, and that tends to be quite expensive. But if you want to know, what's Tika going to do on this file? What's Tika make of this file? Why did that one file fail? it's really, really handy for that. And for also when you're trying to debug new things or add new features, you can say, run the Tika app with this extra jar, see if I get meaningful stuff back. Tika server is more recent. Anyone played with that one? It's a RESTful server that wraps up Tika, provides some API endpoints, and you can give Tika server a file, get back the type, all the content, all the metadata. If you're trying to use Tika from a non-Java language, this is our recommendation of the way to do it, because you only spawn the JVM once, and then in Python, in Ruby, in PHP, or whatever, you just pass the data over, get the answer back. We've got language bindings for Tika, which almost all work with the server. If you're using the Python bindings, if you're using the PHP bindings, under the hood, what they do is take your data, fire it off to the server, give you back the answer. Any OSGI people in the room? Okay, there's a bundle. I'm told it works. We now have unit tests. About a year ago at ApacheCon, we managed to corner one of the Felix people and feed him beer, and then he wrote us some unit tests and fixed a load of stuff, and now it's apparently awesome. Give it a try. Tika batch. Anyone trying to do a few million files through Tika? At least a few thousand? Okay. There's a batch mode that's available in the app where you give it a directory structure containing files, and it will run it through with text extraction or whatever, process all of them, handles respawning, failing JVMs, all that kind of stuff. Named entity recognition. Everyone know what that one is? Got a few people, a few blank looks. If we take the text, the room monitor will be Svante in Girona 5. We can look at that and say, okay, so Svante, that's a name of a person. Girona 5, that's a place. And so it's working out from a piece of text what the components of it are, so that you can then do other things with it. Apache UEMA and OpenNLP are two of the ones that are available at Apache. There's a few other ones as well. Tika has hooks to call out to some of these to then mark up the HTML so that you can then do more interesting things with it, such as figuring out that even though this document was all plain text, it was talking about Nick and Svante, so that you can search for it. The other nice thing we've got is the geo-entity lookup. So if you take the text, this was written in Seville, Spain in November, you can use named entity recognition to spot that Seville, Spain is a place. And then we use the Apache Lucene Gazetta, which does really fast place name lookup off of the geonames dataset, so that we can tell you that this document is talking about Seville and give you the geographic coordinates for it. If you step outside with a modern phone and take a photo of the Plaza de España, your phone will use the GPS and geotag that JPEG, and then Tika can give you that metadata back, and you can do the nifty demo where you search for things near so-and-so. This lets you do it for documents, so that you can find that documents are talking about certain places. You will need to grab a whole bunch of extra stuff. It's all documented on the wiki, because you have to have the Gazetta running and you have to get the data in and turn on a few extra features. But if you're then interested, you can start finding out what's going on and where your documents refer to. C-takes, any C-takes users? Anyone come across it? Sorry? Yes, that's the one. In some ways, C-takes is a brilliant example of what you can do with all of the Apache stuff when you have some training data sets. So it's trying to take UEMA and OpenNLP and all the other natural language processing things and provide a medical and pharma-related training data set. The trouble with most of the NLP stuff is that you have to teach it what you're expecting so that it can then go off and do the same things for other documents, which means that you're going to have some pre-existing test corpuses or a redundant array of interns or whatever's going to be needed. Whereas with C-takes, they've taken all of that and they've done the training data sets, and they'll give you a training data set for OpenNLP that can then tell you in this particular sentence, that's a drug, that's a bit of the body, that's the thing that's gone wrong. C-takes has an integration with Tika so that if you're working on text that's talking about medical things, you can hand it off to CTakes and then get back the named entities that you can index. Translation, we don't have a translation system, but we have hooks into other ones like Yandex, like the Microsoft one. So you can take the text or the metadata, get it translated and bring it back, which is helpful if you're dealing with things that aren't in your own language. If you've just been spidering information on ApacheCon and you've come across a bunch of stuff in Spanish that you don't speak, if you wanted, or within the Tika interface, you could have that sent off to an external service, translated and come back, so that you then have a consistent pipeline if you want. Language detection, working out that this piece of text is in Spanish or English. Handy if you want to do the translation, but also useful if you're going to warn your users that this piece of content they probably can't understand. One other thing we've done recently is the troubleshooting. If you go to the wiki, look for troubleshooting, it covers most of the queries we've had on the mailing list in the last year and most of the ones from Stack Overflow in the last year. Talks you through the steps you need to follow to work out why you didn't get any text or why you got that exception. The most common ones are you're missing a bunch of jars, you're missing all the jars, you're using the wrong jars. After that, it's probably that there's a bug in PDF box. But it'll talk you through the steps you need to follow to work out what's gone wrong and who you have to shout at. So we've had quite a few recently where some people have been working with a lot of PDFs, things haven't worked, so we've documented it all there, and it talks them through using the Apache PDF box tool from the latest release to test if PDF box works. And then if PDF box works, you know it's a Tika bug. If PDF box doesn't work, you know you have to go and report it to PDF box and tell us that you've done that so that we know to upgrade when they fix that to get the fix. If anyone is trying to write their own parsers or trying to do something really advanced, we've got the errors and exceptions documentation now, which is saying, for the following broken cases, what should you as a parser do? And hence, what is for you as a user should you expect? When parsing a document and you get halfway through and it turns into gibberish and you can no longer understand it, what exception should you give? When you're parsing an embedded resource and you realize that the embedded resource is corrupted, how should you signal to the user that there was a broken embedded resource while still carrying on with the rest of the document? All the parsers now should be supporting that structure, but it's trying to mean that there's consistency between the formats on what to do when things go wrong, not just what we had in the older releases, which was consistency when things went right. Okay. Last few releases. 1.12, we added a whole bunch of new callouts to named entity recognition supports. We added the geotopic parser. We did the pool time series parser, which was the one I've already mentioned, where you get some, you turn some video into a text-like thing so you can do the similarity. And then we did some consistency fixes between the spreadsheet formats. 1.13, we upgraded, I think, more than half of the dependencies in one big bang, went through getting all of those, the latest ones, quite a few new scientific formats, and then we made it easier to dump your Tika config out to then check that it was what you wanted or make the changes. Then 1.14, which came out a few weeks ago, some improvements around how we were handling the embedded documents, and then we added support for extracting out the macros from Microsoft Office file formats, so that if you're interested in seeing, does this document have a macro, what's the text of the macro, do I maybe want to block this, it's now possible to get the macros out of Microsoft Office. We're working with the PDF box project to make it easier to get the equivalent for PDFs, which is the JavaScript that you can embed in a PDF to run, and we're hoping that that's going to be in 1.15. We've done some more improvements around the OCR, some more My Magics. A while ago in the Tika server, we added the file URL option, And then we thought about it for a bit and turned it off because it was a bit dangerous that you could just post a URL to the Tika server and it will go off and fetch it for you and then give you back the text, which maybe isn't quite good because you can say, hey, Tika server, would you mind passing etc. password for me? Oh, thanks. So we turned that one off. And then a few people complained because they had actually secured their servers and now they're having to fetch it twice. So there's now an option to turn that back on that prints out a big warning that says you really, really don't want to do this unless you've secured your server first. But if you have, you can then just give URLs to the server and it'll fetch them and pass them for you. 1.15 is the current development release. We've added support for a few more of the JPEG formats, especially for getting them out of PDFs and getting them OCR'd. We've done some more work on the PDF box upgrades. We're also looking at ways that we can let you run PDF box 2 and 1.8 at the same time, if one's working and one's not. Some language detection improvements going in, more NLP stuff, and then the preparations for Tika 2. So, Tika 2. If we scroll back to my really terrible graph of releases. Okay, so, Tika 1 here. 2011. We're now up here. Still no Tika 2. The problem is that we turn out to be really good at maintaining backwards compatibility. So every time someone has said that they want to break something and go for Tika 2, we've found a way of fitting that feature in without breaking compatibility. So we're still up. We're now at 1.15. And if your code compiled against 1.0, it will still run against 1.15. It'll behave pretty much the same against 1.15 as it did against 1.0. Only a handful of breaks since then. But the number of things that we can no longer maintain backwards compatibility on is growing. So I think we're pretty close to a 2 release now, which will have a few breaking changes. And then the biggest one is if you're compiling against 1.15 now and you get any deprecation warnings, they will go. The most common ones that will affect you are if you're using the pass method without a pass context, which was something that we changed in about 1.4. At the moment, there's a shim that will kick in and add the extra missing argument, but that'll go away and you'll have to specify your pass with a pass context. The other one is the really, really old-style metadata keys will go. At the moment, we are, for a lot of the very common metadata types, we'll actually set the metadata twice, once on the new namespace Dublin Core style and once on the really old non-namespaced. We're going to be ditching all of those old non-namespaced keys. So if you're doing metadata.get title, that'll break. As long as you're doing metadata.get DC title or metadata.get Tika metadata keys.title, they'll both keep working. But the really, really old non-namespaced stuff will stop working. Metadata storage is still up for a little bit of debate. At the moment, all the metadata in Tika is string key to string values. There are more strongly typed things like dates and integers and so on, but how they actually work is they're stored as a string internally, and then there's getters that give you the specific type back. Some people want to do some cool stuff with JSON or DOM or XMP. Other people like the fact that it's all really simple. Every time someone has come up with a feature that needed a richer string format that would stop working as text keys, someone else worked out how to shoehorn it into the old model. So we haven't had to break it yet, but there's a chance that internally the model may change. Externally, you'll still be able to say, Tika, give me the metadata for Dublin Core title and get back a string, but internally that model might alter a little bit. One of the big problems we've got at the moment is for video. If you've got a video file that contains 2 video streams, 4 audio streams, and some subtitles, it's a bit confusing how you represent in simple textual metadata which thing represents what. and also which things belong together. So if you've got the main video stream with the main English language text and the English language subtitle, then they're all kind of the same thing. And then the German language and the German subtitles are kind of, they're together, but they're a bit different. And then the alternate camera angle, that's kind of a different thing, but they're all sort of together. We can't work out amongst us what the right way is to represent that, because we can't all agree on which things go together and which things don't. We're probably going to have to reach a compromise soon, and that might require some changes in the metadata. What we're really hoping is that maybe sometime in the 90s, some obscure IETF task force might have come together and come up with a really good model that we can steal. We're sure that someone in broadcasting or media or something somewhere has built a conceptual model for describing this stuff that we can rip off and copy. If any of you come across it, please tell us. Otherwise, we'll reinvent our own and we might not do it right. Biggest change that people are likely to see when upgrading to Tika 2 is the packaging. At the moment, you'll have the Tika core jar, you'll have the Tika parsers jar and all the dependencies, or you might use the Tika OSGI bundle. And you either have Tika parsers or you don't. You either got all of the file formats or none of them. Given the size of all those dependencies, that's starting to be an issue for some people. So for Tika 2, we've gone for some more fine-grained parsers. It's available in Git on the 2.x branch if you want to have a play, but these are the groupings that we've now got for parsers. So you can say, I want all parsers, and it'll behave the same way it does on 1.x. Or you can say, I'm only interested in images. And you can go and grab the multimedia package, and that will then give you only the image and other multimedia-related parsers and nothing else. So you can greatly shrink the number of dependencies that you've got. We're still having a bit of a play with how to do the integration testing and what happens if you say, I want PDF, and then we find an image inside that PDF, and you haven't given us the image multimedia package. How do we kind of warn you that you said you only wanted PDF, but actually we think you might be mistaken, and let you know that you might want to add this extra bundle in. But if you want to have a play, you can do a build from Git 2.x. You can use that now. We are porting all the fixes over. I think at least one Apache project is using just the PDF and text modules already. The other thing that we're working on at the moment and still don't have a good conceptual model for is if there's several parsers available for a format. How to let you sensibly say which parsers you want to try in what order and what to do if one of them fails. For example, you might say, I want to try PDF box 2, but if that one fails, I want you to try PDF box 1.8 instead. Or you might say, I've got an image, I want you to run that through the standard image parser and get all the metadata, then I want you to run it through the OCR parser. That kind of thing, where you're specifying preferences or fallbacks and that sort of thing. And the main challenge that we've got is the SACS content handler interface, which is the main way that we give back the text. It's one way. We can't say, hey, about 10 minutes ago we gave you a paragraph tag and then we gave you a load of text and we've changed our mind and we'd actually like to throw away that paragraph tag and start again because we've given up on that parser and we've tried a new one. We can't say, hey, we gave you a heading and then we gave you a load of text and then that parser finished and now we've started the next parser and it would like to actually go back and edit that heading and add the fact that the heading relates to Seville as a geo property on it. There's no way to let one parser augment another parser or to go back and tell the user that we've given them some text and we've changed their mind and we're going to give them some different text. So we can't easily do the fallback, we can't easily do the augmentation, which, and the augmentation is really important if you're doing the named entity recognition or the geo-entity recognition later. We're thinking about maybe having a new interface where you can opt in to some of the reset stuff that would require you to buffer into memory. It needs to be opt-in, because if you've got a 2 terabyte text document, then you probably don't want to buffer that all into memory so that we can skip back and make some changes. It's probably going to be opt-in. So the thing stopping us giving you a nice, easy way to have fallback passes or augmenting passes and things is the fact that we need to come up with a better way to let you know when we've changed our mind. The other thing that we're playing with is the way that you specify to Tika that you've got additional passes or additional detectors. You can just drop an extra jar on the class path with the right service file in, and Tika will magically detect that and start using it. By default, the error messages are not displayed. If you've got a broken parser, if you've got a parser that's missing some jars, we'll just ignore them, which is what you probably want for production. It's not necessarily what you want when you're getting started, because all you know is that you gave Tika a document and nothing came back. You can use the config XML or some code to set it to warn or error, and then it will tell you, hey, you gave me a PDF, but you've been a Muppet and forgotten to give me a PDF box to go with it. Probably in 2 we'll change the default to something that's a bit more informative for new users, and then let advanced users turn that off. But it's not certain. Okay, so we still need help with working out how best to do the content handler SAC stuff and the reset. Still not completely sure what's the best way to enhance the content, where you can have something that will go through and say, here's some text, and then something else that pops along later and says, that's Seville, that's Svante, here's his Wikipedia page. We're still trying to find some more metadata standards, especially for the video and multimedia, so that we don't have to reinvent our own. Svante says I've got a couple of minutes left, so I'll just say a few bits about Tika at scale. If you're trying to spider the whole internet, 1% of the internet is still a lot, and at least 1% of the internet is garbage. So you've got to start planning for failures. And if you've got Tika inside your main JVM and you're working with nice, friendly documents coming from your content management system, that's perfect. If you've got Tika inside your JVM and you've got random PDFs coming in off the internet, then sooner or later one of them's going to wipe out Tika and wipe out your JVM and then wipe out the rest of your application, which is maybe not good. Or you're going to be using Hadoop or Mesos and it will say, oh, the node's gone. Must be a faulty node. Let's start that node up again and give it that document, and oh, I've lost it again. Machine's rubbish. Turn that machine off. Over here. Hi, I've got the... Oh. So maybe you have to tell Mesos or Hadoop or whatever. If a document fails twice, it's probably not the machine, it's the document. Please stop giving this document to the rest of my cluster. If you're doing lots of stuff at scale, you're going to hit a lot of weird errors, a lot of weird MIME types, things that aren't supported. You're not going to be able to look through all of them. If you're working on Tika with 100 documents, you can look at all the errors individually. If you're working on Tika on 100 terabytes, you're not. Log common exceptions, log common bits of files that you don't understand, and then come back later and see what the most important for you. And then the other thing we're doing on Tika at the moment is with Tika batch and Tika eval. Tika batch, you can give it a directory, it'll run through, give you all the text and all the errors. So if you've got a really big regression corpus, as we now have, you can run that through and find out what changed. And then we've got Tika eval, which is trying to help you work out what the differences are so that you can dig in. Because you don't want to say, I've run Tika on 5 terabytes worth of documents, and I've run it for the old version of Tika and the new version of Tika. I'm going to manually go and compare each one to see how it's changed. You just want to get a general sense of what's gone better, what's gone worse. If you go to that URL there, it's maybe a bit hard to read here, but the slides will go up. It explains a bit about all the corpuses that we use for this stuff. And then the output of things like this. Between these two versions, we had 23,000 documents that used to claim to be an Excel file, now claim to be an Excel graph file. You can look at that and go, yes, we did actually fix the detection. That's expected. Good. If you saw a load of stuff that used to be Octet Stream and is now WordPerfect, that's an improvement. If you then look further down and you say, oh, well, we used to have a whole bunch of stuff that was PNG, and now it's coming through as a weird Apple multipart, maybe that's not expected. Maybe that's a bug. And so you can look at that and focus your investigations into what changed. You can then run this stuff on your own corpuses if you're thinking about doing a Tika upgrade, thinking about making a change to one of the parsers, your own customizations, you can have a quick look through and say, did that, on the whole, get better when I made the change? I think we've got no time for questions.
Yes, no. Is the next speaker already in the room, may I ask? No? So please continue, if you don't mind. We've a little late.
Okay.
Any questions?
Otherwise, post to the Tika dev list, and we'll do our best to answer.
Quick question. So we are trying in my company to, we use Python for that right now, but we extract the content for PDF, both when the PDF is containing a scanned image or text. And with text, the most normal case is that the text is inside the PDF is completely unsorted. So is now Tika able to extract the text in order, or it's not possible right now?
You probably need to tweak some of the PDF parser options to get it to work right. Ask on the dev list. Tim Allison is the expert in that stuff. I know that he's done some work on it. I know that he's added some options. I know that he knows which ones to use when. I don't, but Tim will help. Okay.
Any further question?
All we got time for? So if you've got any other queries, ask on the Tika list. I'm going to post these slides up over lunch. So if you go to the conference website, choose Program, then Slides, you better download the slides and have a look. Okay, thanks.
Thanks again, speaker.